listening to Punisher Waterfowls, the Union 0430 podcast. Brought to you by Real Geese Decoys, the most technologically advanced silhouette decoy on the market. First Light, the best hunting gear on the planet. Go farther, stay longer. And Ducklander Calls, tradition, education, and quality, built to hunt.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Union 0430 podcast. This is episode 183. If you're watching, it's a small crowd here tonight. It's just Craig and I on. Philly is doing daddy daycare, I think. And I think he's at a hockey rink with his son. And Merck is probably doing another search or something, so he can't make it. So it's unfortunately, you just got Craig and I here tonight. So Craig's coming to us all the way from Wabasheen, Ontario, and I'm outside of Kingston, Ontario. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming on, Craig.
No problem.
You know,
I think Phil's lying. I think he just needs a nap.
Yeah, probably, because it is the first day of turkey hunting. So everybody, this is what, the 24th of April? 25th, we're talking. So this show goes out on the 30th is the day that it'll actually, the 29th or the 30th, it'll be available. So, yeah, Phil's probably napping. That's a good call. He's probably using that as an excuse to catch some Z's. He did say he's been on the go since 4 o'clock this morning. So,
okay. Your kids are needing to get out of things.
Yeah. Well, always blame your kids. Everybody, please, however you're listening to us, if it's through a podcast, if you're streaming it through Spotify, Apple Music, any of those platforms, please make sure that you're following us and you give us a like. And then with regards to YouTube, which we put the video up, please make sure you're subscribing to the YouTube channel. It really do make a difference when you're listening and you're watching on YouTube, because hopefully someday we'll make some money off of YouTube, but we got a ways to go on that. And of course, please go check out our sponsors, First Light, Real Geese, and Ducklander Calls. They've been with us pretty much from the beginning, and you know, they're just great companies, and we can't thank them enough. So please head over to their social media and their websites and check them out, and let them know that you heard about them through the Punisher Waterfowl 0430, the Union 0430 podcast. So I can breathe now. I got that out of the way. I wouldn't be able to do it. Like, I don't listen to a ton of podcasts, but I do listen to some, and there's some out there, like, you'll be like 4 or 5 minutes just listening to the sponsors. And I'm just like, holy fuck, I'm glad I don't have... Now, some of those are professional podcasters, and they get a voiceover guy to do the, you know, our sponsors are this, and they can run on forever. And they don't have to do it at every show. It's already pre-recorded and stuff like that. But I don't know, like...
I listen to where they don't pre-record it, and they only have one sponsor, but it just kind of... They go on... But it's just kind of winging it, and it just kind of starts to ramble.
Yeah.
Because it sounds bad.
Yeah. I just, you know, we talked about it way back first when this, you know, this show started. And that was the one thing we all sort of kind of agreed on was, listen, let's not make this like 80 different sponsors on the show. You know, for the longest time, it was really only one. And that was Real Geese. That was Craig Mintz. He was the only one for, you know, quite a long time. And then First Light came on, and then Ducklander came on lastly. But, you know, it's cool to have all these sponsors and stuff. And it's cool that people and these brands want to help you out, and they want to get behind you. But there's some responsibility that comes with that too, right? Like, you know, you want to, they're sponsoring, so they're, however it is that they're they're compensating you for that. And that, and that's not just a podcast. That's for, you know, guys that do pro staff or work for these companies or whatever. Like, I know guys.
Depends on what you're willing to kind of give up too, right? Like,
well, yeah.
You've always said that, like, with the sponsors you've got them because they just said, yeah, we'll sponsor you, but keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
But imagine some, it's just the obligation to them must be huge, and just a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Responsibility is what I call it.
Yeah, and I guess just them would be, you know, more of the sponsors steering the ship kind of thing, right?
Right, right. Well, we are really, really lucky that way, because I can remember the very first time we spoke to Craig Mintz about it, and he was like, don't change a thing. I love it the way it is. Don't change it. You know, Bobby Hayes, same thing. I remember, you know, talking to him, and same with Logan Williamson from First Light and Craig Mintz from Real Geese. Like, when I talked to him, they were like, listen, like, don't think that you can't have another call company on. Don't think that you can't have another clothing company on. Like, that's not what we're about. Not at all, right? So that's pretty cool of them that they're cool like that. But I know people, and probably it's not so much now, because I do think that this whole pro staff thing is starting to go the way of the dodo bird. Like, you don't hear so much about it anymore. And I think we even talked about it on the last episode, right?
Yeah, the last episode or the one before, recently anyways.
Yeah. So I don't think there's a lot of fellows. What I do think is happening is I think that the big brands that are within the industry, they still want people that push their product and do the social media thing and wear it and do videos and stuff like that. But I think they're a lot more, I don't know what the word, I think they're pickier on who it is that they're bringing. And it's just not a blanket, like the 20% or the 30% discount. I don't think that's it anymore. Right. Like, yeah. I think the people that they bring in now, it's, listen, you can get, you know, $1,000 worth of gear for this, but, you know, for that $1,000 worth of gear, we expect this, and this, not just being tagged on social media, right? Because
yeah.
I think that's the evolution of it now, is that these companies of, hey, listen, we're giving you something, we're giving you a lot, actually, and therefore we want a lot, and because I view them as they hold all the cards, right? So what they give you is it's not going to always be equal to what you give them. Yeah. Does that make sense?
And I think it'd be so different now, because if you know, in the past, not just anybody could have a name, sort of thing, right? So
right.
If a product was coming to you or a business was coming to you, you probably already had some sort of presence.
Yeah.
And you're one of the few kind of thing. Whereas now everybody can have the same amount of presence, because like we talked about before, you can buy followers, you can,
absolutely.
Everybody's got the same access to the same stuff as everybody else. So
yeah,
I think they would have to be choosier, because otherwise and the ability for people to make it look like they're associated with the brand when they're not.
Yeah. Well, what I think, and not that I know a ton of people, but the few people that I do know that are involved in that world where they're, you know, they work for a brand or they're sponsored by a brand or whatever that word is that they're using these days. But these people, like, it's a ton of work that these people got. So I look at a guy like Wade Shoemaker, who is, you know, photography, videography, all fall long, he's on the road, just, you know, just putting in miles, crazy. You know what I mean? Like Sean Stahl, same deal, right? Like, just.
Yeah. It's constant. Easy to think that it'd be a sweet, easy gig to have. Right. But it's like, oh yeah, you go hunting and take pictures.
Yeah.
But the amount of miles, the amount of hours. And
absolutely, man. Like, I think that's, you know, when you look at social media and stuff, and you see these fellas and you're like, oh man, it must be nice to just travel around and hunt and, you know, your gear is covered or, you know, you're testing out new gear for the upcoming year or whatever it is. on the surface, it looks like such a great time.
Yeah.
But you know that that's a drain on those guys. It's a drain on your family, like being away all the time, young families, young kids. Your spouse has to be extremely understanding. And I would think, and I'm not putting words in anybody's mouth here, but I would think it would have to be very beneficial for the person that's doing it, for this, for the company, right? Because you're leaving your family in most cases for, you know, weeks at a time, and then coming home just to recharge the batteries to go back out again. It would have
perfect.
Yeah. Go Sorry. For it.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think a perfect example of people misunderstanding what a job is would be like Marco and Blake from DU and Delta.
Yeah.
Like that fundraising manager job, people think is I've done it. You've done it.
Yeah.
And it's funny when you hear, when there's an opening, when you hear people are anxious to jump at it, cause like they have this view of what that job is. It's like you go from town to town and party and they think, oh, it's gotta be a great job. And it is, but
it
man,
is.
It's an easy job to, it's an easy one to think that you have an understanding of what it would be, what would be involved with. But it's exactly everything you just said, right? There's no out, like there's no set hours.
No,
like I know what I was doing. I kept a spreadsheet just for the sake of just kind of keeping track
for
myself.
For your own.
It's like you were working nonstop. And if somebody, one thing I found is like, if somebody texted you at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, cause they were working shift work. They, you know, if you didn't answer by the time you got, like, if you didn't answer in the middle of the night, you know, people would be upset that you hadn't responded.
Yeah.
And it's like, so like you were on nonstop.
Oh yeah. You were on nonstop.
After dinner, home at 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, and then you're right back at the next day.
You know, and you know this, and by no means are me and you here trying to talk about how hard we had it when we done those jobs, but it's a testament to guys like Blake Schmirler and Marco Cunha and Rob Watson and Billy Dugan and all those guys all across Canada and the United States that do it for years, because I don't even think I lasted a year. I think I started in like, I think it was like, I don't know, I want to say it was in October. And by April I was done. I was like, man, I can't do this. Like this is, I'm burning the candle on both ends here. Like this is, I had just retired from a full-time career, and this was supposed to be sort of a, hey, this is fun, let's do this. Fuck, dude, like it was hard. And I'm not taking anything away from Marco, or I'm not taking anything away from the DU guys, but the DU guys, there's more of them to do it. But you look at a guy like Blake Schmirler, like Blake's it for Ontario. Like, Ontario is fucking huge. And that dude has to take care of that province all by himself. Meanwhile, when I was working for DU, there was four of us in Ontario. Like, it's crazy, crazy. But
and you look at a guy like Rob, who even just covers the northern part of Ontario.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a 12-hour drive from one committee meeting to the next one, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah, absolutely. And all that being said, you know, it's a good segue into the fact that we're at that time of year now, this spring time of year, where you're starting to get a lot of these fundraising banquets, and you're seeing these chapters coming up with new and creative ways to raise money for their respective organization, be it Delta or DU or SCI or whatever it is, NWTF, CWTF, whatever it is. You know, and I guess here's one of the biggest examples I could get. So if you're ever curious on where your money goes, and you know, like that membership that you bought, that painting that you bought, you know, buying your dinner ticket, whatever it is, you know, you take that win that PEI just had, where now they're allowed Sunday hunting, And that was a Delta Waterfowl initiative, and I don't, maybe initiative is the wrong word, but they backed it, and they were really, really serious about it and got behind it and put the full weight of their organization behind it. And now, you know, the province of Prince Edward Island is now going to be able to do Sunday gun hunting. Your fundraising dollars help pull that off, because they've got to fly to meetings. They've got to be able to, you know, stay in hotels. They got all that shit, right? So that's the thing that I personally feel that not everybody, but there is a lot of people that don't realize the amount of money that it takes for these organizations to be able to pull off what they pull off.
Yeah. And how efficiently they do it, or some of them do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big thing too. Like, everybody has to choose, because everybody's got limited amounts of funds to put towards
things.
It's, the important thing is looking into which organization speaks to you and what their mandate is, and if it aligns with your values and what you want to put your money towards. So, like myself, like, we give to a handful of different ones, but it's like, this one covers this, this one covers this, this one covers this. So, and not just for like hunting or conservation, but just things in general.
Yeah.
And I think the important thing, and we think we talked about one of the previous calls, was doing your due diligence to look at things like their financial statements every year, and their those big boring reports, because it's like, that's where you see how efficient they are. And it's great when an organization says, you know, we bring in this many millions of dollars every year, but then what? Where is it going? So I think it's important to look to see where the money's going and if that aligns with what your values are.
Yeah, and I've said this on this show many times, and maybe people agree with me, maybe people disagree with me. I really don't care. But I feel that as a hunter, it is my responsibility to give back. Now, to giving back can be on any different level, and it can be a million different things. It could be money. It could be your time. It could be anything. I'm in a position today that I can have a Delta membership, a DU membership, an OFAH membership, and I can go to these events and I can support them. Not crazy, but I can support them in little bits, right? But I wasn't always that way. So I don't want people to be listening to this and saying, well, fuck, I don't have $200 to be passing out in memberships and shit like that. No, I'm not saying you need to be a part of everything. And that plays into what you just said. Well, listen, if you can only be part of one, then do your research and find out which one speaks most to you, because it may be DU and maybe it'll be Delta. Who knows? That's up to you to decide.
And like you said, it's not just about the money, right? Like, what can you do with your time? What can you do with your connections? Because like, I know even for me, a lot of what, so I've been involved on the event side of things since I was a kid. But more so lately, I've been involved in more like the provincial councils and stuff like that. So trying to get more engagement with volunteers, that the existing volunteers, and bringing new ones on, with staff on that, and, you know, trying to figure out what opportunities we can have. And even, you know, even if that's kind of outside of your availability, you know, sharing stuff on your social media too, right? Like, all of these organizations have social media pages, some bigger than others. It's like, for me, my big thing is, like we've talked about before, you know, if you share something and I share something, we're getting a lot of the same people, but there's always those people that from our different backgrounds and our different connections, right? So it's getting, you know, helping get word out there, and that's as simple as a share or a like and things like that, and just passing on what connections you've got.
I remember it was a couple years ago. I don't know who it was, if it was Delta or if it was Ducks. It was one of them, and they had put up a social media post, and it was a picture, and it was a duck in like a park pond, and it just had that, you know, that circle with the line through it with a loaf of bread. and I was saying don't feed ducks bread because it's very bad for ducks that they be fed bread. I shared that, and the amount of people that shared it after me that were not necessarily duck hunters, but they were people that went to parks and threw bread to parks and brought their kids that had no idea that bread is bad for them. And that's a prime example that, hey, listen, that costs nothing. And it took 2 seconds of my time to share that. And God knows how many ducks it probably saved. Because I don't know, man, there was probably 30 or 40 people shared that. And then their friends seen it, right? So you're 100% right. It doesn't always have to be a monetary value. And in fact, I would hazard to say that with Delta and ducks, I don't think they'll ever have enough money, because they'll always be looking for more money to do more research and do more projects and stuff like that. But I know on the couple of chapters that I'm involved with, volunteers and people, bodies to do stuff is something that they really, really need. And that's that's both organizations. They need volunteers, and they need them bad.
Well, and with any organization, like even, you know, thinking like your local hunters and anglers clubs and stuff like that, like my family, we're members at a club here. And, you know, like anything, you get a handful of people. Like we've got 500 members or something like that now. Wow. Something like that. And, you know, how many different people do you tend to see, right?
Right.
You get the same people on the board. And usually if there's an opportunity to volunteer, it's the board members that are there. And it's getting better. I think with most organizations, you're getting new people, you're getting younger people on that and cycling through. And a lot of those, because I think a lot of times there's always that, well, we can't get new people, but it's like you need some, it's hard to get new people when there's no turnover either, right?
Right.
So you want to get new people, but you're keeping all the same people all the time, and that could create barriers, and it does sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think in general, some of that's, you're getting more of that turnover in organizations, and you're getting more recruitment. And again, with that comes different pots of money, different allotments of time that people have to give, and different connections.
I got a question for you, because I know you do spend a lot of time recruiting volunteers and trying to drum up volunteers and stuff like that. And you know, it's the elephant in the room, right? And I know nobody wants to come right out and say it, but there is sort of kind of that expectation there, right? So if you're trying to just pull Joe Blow off the street to come in and volunteer for one of these organizations, and this is Damian Pittman saying this, there has to be, I honestly believe that there has to be some enticement for the volunteer. So I get it. You get to be able to sleep easier at night knowing that you're doing something for the environment or doing something for the birds or whatever. But I do believe that there has to be some sort of value added to that. So if that is, I don't know, a free membership, or if it's a fucking t-shirt, or if it's a hat, or if it's something, I do believe that there should be something for the volunteers that, hey, oh, you're volunteer, or, you know, you bought a membership. Okay, well, here's a hat, or here's a t-shirt, or, you know, this is our chapter's t-shirt, or something like that. I really do believe something simple like that would make life a lot easier when it comes to looking for volunteers. Like, what's your thoughts on it? Because I know it costs money, right?
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think that's the view from most people. And now I know myself, I'm different than that. I don't.
Right.
And I'm bad. I can get pretty judgy when it comes to people who, you know, like they're volunteering but they're coming with their hands out kind of thing.
Yeah.
Cause there's always that fine line too, right? Like you need people, but at the same time, it's like, well, you know, which people do we need?
Right.
And, But yeah, like there definitely needs to be something, because not everybody's going to be, you know, have the same mindset where I'm here because that's what I want to do. And yep. not, and yeah, not most people aren't like that. So there's got to be something, I think, some opportunity for it.
But would you agree with this statement? And it's okay if you don't. But I think that comes with age. Mm-hmm. So me personally, I do not need another DU hat. I do not need another Delta hat or a Delta sticker or any of that stuff. I don't need it because yeah. I've gotten so many of them over the years. So my volunteer time, it's honestly because, well, you know what? Maybe it's not honestly out of the goodness of my heart. I would think that mostly. But I'm also going there to connect with people because I want to meet future hunting partners as well, right? So maybe I am a little bit jaded in my reasons for volunteering, because there is an alternative motive there where I am hoping that I'm going to meet somebody else that I can go hunting with or share a property with or something like that. But I don't know, like.
I think, yeah, the connections are a huge part, even for me, because for me, I'm not, it's funny, I can, at times, like, I'm not an overly social person, but mm-hmm. like, usually if people see me around, I come across as very, very social, but, and also for me, it's like the volunteering and like the DU dinners and that, it's basically my hobby, it's my pastime, so it's like, that's mm-hmm. where my time goes, right? If it's not a hunting season, chances are I'm just working away at DU stuff. But yeah, like those connections or being at a dinner. And the thing I really like, the thing I get out of it is, you know, I've been doing it for so long. You'll be at dinners and every year people come up and yeah. I may not even remember who they are. I may recognize a face, and I'm usually really good at remembering people's faces and names and their whole story and everything. But there's times where we're at the dinners or even on the street, people will come up and start talking to me. And I know they're from a dinner or something, but yeah. I have no idea. I can't remember, but they know me. They, yeah. you know, they come, they'll call me by name. And so like, I like that. I like those connections. I like yeah. that you've left an impression, yeah. and especially like, with the dinners. Like I like the success of the dinners. I like when at the end of the night, people are walking out and there's no complaints. Everybody's had a good time. So that's for me, like that's what I get out of it. Yeah. It's like, I'm doing it because I value
yeah.
organizations. And again, not just even conservation. Like I volunteered with Big Brothers and Big Sisters too for the longest time. And yeah, it's like, you know, you get into it for your own reasons and stuff as well, right? So yeah, you're doing it because it's the right thing to do and you've got the ability to do it. But yeah, there's always something you're getting out of it, whether it's a hat or whether it's right. you know, those connections and things like that.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it, I guess. Like,
I guess it's just what's your motivation for it, right? That's the thing that always sticks with me for people is like, what's your motivation? Like, yeah. I like to make connections, but I'm not looking to gain. Like, I'm not out there trying to sell myself, kind of thing, right?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. Like, I guess, you know, for what one person considers, hey, this is a win. I got a hat. Vices another person, hey, I just found somebody else I can go dog train with. You know, it's on the same plane. It's just, it's different people and what their priorities are and where they are in life, really, because I do think that the material things that some people look for, and hey, listen, I was one of those guys that wanted a fucking hat too, right? Like I did. I wanted a hat. Hey, can I have a hat? Sure, you can have a hat. Yeah. Here's a hat. And I fucking wear that hat, and I love wearing the hat. But I'm past that point in my life now, right? And I'm not judging anybody that's at that point in their life. I guess the only thing I'm trying to do is offer a little bit of advice to, hey, listen, you're going to get more out of it than just a hat. Like right now, you're focused on the hat, and I'm using the hat as an overarching tangible thing, but yeah. You know, at some point it's going to hit you where, you know, it's just a hat, but there's way more I'm getting out of this than that materialistic thing, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Yeah. Well, I really didn't think we were going to spend that much time talking about that.
But here we are.
But it's good though, because I honestly do think that, you know, there's people that are very one-sided, so they're one organization or the other. And I always looked at Billy Dugan, and you probably knew Billy too, right?
I don't think I ever met him. I've talked to him online over the years, but yeah.
So Billy was a DU guy, and then he switched over and he became a Delta guy as a fundraising guy, right? And I can remember we were in Winnipeg on national meetings one time, and you know, and I'd brought it up to Billy, and I was talking about, you know, Delta versus DU, DU versus Delta, that sort of thing. And Billy Dugan looked at me and he said, "This is the way I look at it." He said, "Delta puts hunters in the blind, but DU is the ones that make sure that there's ducks to hunt or there's a place to hunt." And he said, "You can't have one without the other." He said, "That's just the way it is." He said, "So you can be more for one or the other." He said, "But if you think one can survive without the other, then you're completely wrong, because both of them, they need one another. You need both organizations in order for us to do what it is that we love to do, which is hunt birds. You've got to have Delta, because Delta does some things that DU doesn't do, and DU does some things that Delta doesn't do. So you got to have that balance, right?"
Yeah. And that's the one thing I've liked since Brian's come on with is just because I already knew Brian, right? All of us already knew Brian or close to him.
Mm-hmm.
We see more, because I didn't know if Delta was doing that stuff before. I wasn't aware of it.
Yeah.
Because we're already so close with Brian, like we see that firsthand now, all the benefits you're getting from that. And similar with other, you know, either hunting advocacy or gun ownership advocacy groups. It's like, everybody's got that little niche. There might be a little bit of overlap, but it's not, you can't view them all the same, right? Like,
no, that's right.
You need to pick and choose. It's like, all right, these guys are going to take care of this for me. These guys are going to take care of this for me. And that's where I'm putting effort.
No, that's good. And, you know, you brought up a good point where you said, I don't really know if they did, like if they were doing that all along. And I'm sure they were, but the fact that we live in this social media age where information is, you know, we're on overload for information all the time. So, you know, when Brian McCrae mentions, "Hey, listen, we're trying to sort this out for PEI." Well, now, hey, listen, he just put that out on his network of friends, and then his network of friends are sharing it. And then, you know, it just continues to multiply in interest, right? So it's impressive, man. Like it really is. And especially in today's world where, you know, the littlest slip up, so the littlest misappropriation of funds or the littlest mistake is blown into out of proportion, and you know, you see brands and businesses live and die by social media.
Yeah.
And here we are with DU and Delta still, you know, what is it? Like, I don't know, that logo, I got the first Delta logo was 1970. So, you know, that's 54 years for Delta that they've been going, and DU has been around,
I think Delta's been around longer than that, because DU Canada started in 38, I think.
Oh, Jesus.
DU in the States started a year before. And I thought Delta was right around there, too. Yeah,
actually, I think, if memory serves me correct, I think Delta is older than DU, to be honest with you.
It sounds right.
It's just... well, I actually, is that's just speculation for me to say what I was going to say. So I'm not even going to bother to say it, because God knows I could be horribly wrong. And well, actually, no, I'll say it, because maybe some people will chime in and change my mind about it. But I think when DU started, and I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Craig, but when DU started, it was a bunch of rich dudes in the United States that came, that started to notice, hey, listen, our duck numbers are starting to, like, it was members of hunting clubs and stuff. Yeah. Hey, our numbers are starting to fucking dwindle. What's going on? And, you know, they had the money to look into the research and stuff. And that's when, you know, the prairie pothole region and the farmland and losing habitat and all that stuff started to, you know, become a concern. And I bring that up because I'm not sure that Delta had the same money behind them first when they started. So I think that's why, for a long time, at least for me, for a long time, I only knew of DU. I didn't know of Delta, right? Because I don't, yeah. Like, I can remember as a kid seeing commercials on TV for Ducks Unlimited, but I didn't see anything for Delta. So anyways, yeah. I could be totally wrong on that.
I think I was in college before I heard of Delta, and that was through, because I went to Fleming College for Fish and Wildlife, and by then I've been going to DU dinner since I was like six and volunteering since 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until I got involved with the committee in Lindsay, so that was Andy Lately running that, or at least on it back then.
Yeah,
and he started talking about Delta, and that was the first I had ever heard of him.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy. Anyways, I'm sure everybody is about done hearing us talk about DU and Delta, so we'll move on about that. A couple things I want to talk about, but this is one thing, and it still blows my mind because I talk to them probably once every 2 weeks, and we always do video calls, and that's Bobby Hayes with Ducklander Calls. And so he called me this morning while I was dog training, and I said, I'll call you back later. I'm dog training right now. So when I got home later in the afternoon, I called him, and like I said, we always do video chats. And he answered. I said, hey, what's up? I said, what are you doing? You busy? Do you have time to chat? He said, oh, yeah. He said, I got time. He said, I'm doing tone boards right now on calls. And I was like, you're doing tone boards? And he was like, yeah. And even though I talked to that guy probably every 2 weeks, once a week or every 2 weeks, whatever it is, it blows my mind just how fucking labor intensive it is for him to fill his orders of duck calls. You know, because now I'm there's a ton of people that's making duck calls, and there's a lot of amateur guys that are doing it, and they're doing it all by hand. But they're not moving out the volume of calls that Bobby Hayes is, right? And the guys that are doing it all by hand, the more and more I talk to Bobby, the more and more I'm impressed by the guys that are doing it all by hand, because it is like, fuck, man, I watch him, like, he had a CNC machine today doing his tone boards. So every 1 minute and 47 seconds, a new fucking call has to go in to get CNC'd for the tone board.
Yeah.
And then he's shown me how many, he's like, well, this is orders for here. This is my stuff for some inventory. Here's this stuff. And I'm just looking at it, and he's like, yeah, man. He's like, I'm just fucking engraving, painting, which they got, everybody got to do the paint by hand, because I don't think there's a way to do it without it. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ, like, that's a lot of fucking work.
Well, especially, it's like, for, like, I'm not familiar with the process or the companies themselves, but it's like, you would think, well, they're pretty big name, like, you would think that it's you know, there's more automation or just more people doing it. You don't expect to get a call from him that he's hands-on and doing that much of it.
But I think that's a misconception by all of us, because I don't think, like, even the biggest call makers out there, like, I'm sure even the, you know, Bobby Hayes and R&T and, you know, fuck, you name it, the big names that are out there, I'm sure there's some automation involved in their process. But at the end of the day, it's still a very hands-on. Like, you look at Rusty, like, Rusty doesn't, from hearing game calls, like Rusty's not punting out the volume of calls that like R&T or Ducklander is, but he's still punting out an impressive volume. And Rusty has no automation.
Yeah. Like and it's that, just him, or the boys helping too, I guess.
Well, the boys help him too, but you know, at the end of the day, I think, and this is just me saying this, I don't know, and the boys could tell me differently, but I think Rusty has the, you know, the final say on it, if this is good or if it's bad, right? Like, I don't know, maybe Benny do now and maybe Riley's involved, but you know, like even for Rusty and all these guys that are amateurs that are doing it, that's part of a hobby, like Chris Tardokas and Brokebeak Calls, all these dudes, even these amateur dudes, and I call amateur, but you know, it's a huge amount of work to be able to pull this off. And I, what I'm learning more and more is that the profit margin isn't as great as what you'd like to think it is. You know what I mean? And this is stuff that
I guess if nothing else, just the amount of time in it, right? Like how much of your time you're putting in.
Yeah. Your time. And then, you know, you're constantly, because it's a call, right? Like, I'm not saying that it's an easy thing to do, but there's a lot of fellas out there making a call and I get it, right? I understand that everybody's call is a little bit different and people make changes and make different sounds and stuff like this, but a call is a call is a call. And most fellas are very loyal to a brand, right? And is not saying that all the other calls are shit. It's just, this is the call you like. This is the one that works best for you, the way you blow and it sounds the best. But that has to be a constant battle for these guys that are making the calls, to try and make sure that you're always one step above your competition, right? Like your social media has to be better. Your video, your photography, everything has to be, because there's so many people that's fighting for the same piece of pie.
Well, so, it seems like same with calls or anything, or like, yeah, like photographers, and it just, there's, it seems like every day there's, you know, on my feed, there's 10 new guys doing what, you know, obviously not the same thing, but the same kind of thing, right? Yeah. So there's only the same amount of people out there buying or looking, so.
Yeah, and everybody is going after the same piece of pie, you know, because let's face it, like, you think the waterfowling world is huge, but it's fucking nothing compared to deer hunters. Like, there's way more deer hunters than what there are duck hunters. You know what I mean? So it's a crazy, crazy world, and trying to carve a living out of this, man, it's gotta be hard on these guys, but it just goes to show just how committed they are. When you find a brand that's been around for years, it got to tell you something, because even me with Punisher, and we've been going for 10 years, I've seen a lot of companies come and go, just in my time, and with my very limited circle of people that I know in the industry, and I've seen a lot come and go. So there's a lot that I don't even know about. So the fellas that are still doing it and been doing it for 20 and 30 years, it's a testament to how much they believe in themselves and their product, really is what it is. So,
well, it's like you were saying, like profit margins and stuff like that, and just your time and how you value that and what else you've got going on in your life. It's great to see, like, there's so many people that, you know, I think it's more so a passion type thing, and it's a pastime, it's a hobby, it's a passion. But one thing I always say, it's like, I'm kind of glad I have no real discernible marketable skills or abilities, because it just seems exhausting, right?
Like, wow.
These guys that have full-time jobs and families, and then, you know, they're in the call shop after work, or the decoy shop, or working on their photos and stuff like that. Like, I can't imagine having, like, just putting that much time into any sort of any kind of extracurricular stuff. Like I said,
I know.
I'm glad I don't have those sort of skills. I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, like when you look at it, like I remember Eric Massey coming on this show one time, and Eric, and that was what Eric said. He was like, you know, 90% of these guys that you see on social media, that, you know, the dudes, the you know, the big names, like 90% of them have fucking full-time jobs. And this is their side hustle. And, you know, you think about it, what you just said, you know, you work a regular fucking 40-hour week, or even let's say it was a part-time job, even if it was only 20 hours a week, you still got to come home, you still got to work in the call shop, the decoy shop, whatever the fuck it is, and you still got a family, or you still got responsibilities that are outside of that, you still got to...
Yeah.
Buy your groceries, do your laundry, cut your lawn. That, you know, like, dude, it's a crazy, crazy commitment. And I guess, you know, that old saying, if it was easy, everybody would do it. I guess this is, you know, proof for these fellas that are in the waterfowling world. Yeah, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And I think that's the reason why they're still so long in the tooth doing it, is because they just got that crazy passion for it, like you said.
Well, it's like when you've got renovations going on at home, right? You come home at the end of the day, you want to relax, but it's like, well, the bathroom's still torn apart. Now you got to do that. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, luckily, I don't do that. If I try and fix things or renovate things, it goes bad. Then I got to pay somebody to fix it. So it's just cheaper to not do it in the long run, or pay somebody else to do it the first time.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's nice. I come home at the end of the day and that's it. I got no call shop to worry about. I got no renovations to worry about.
Yeah, but with that being said, you still have two small boys and a wife, right? So, you know, like, I get it. Like, it's easier for me now. Like, both of my kids are growing up. You know, one's 18 and one's 15. So they don't require. I remember we were down hunting for the late season for geese back whenever it was, February, maybe, whenever it was. And we were down to Steve Segulik's. And we were down there, you know, and there was fellas there, and they were sort of kind of, well, I can't because I got the kids, and the wife doesn't want me to do this because we got this going on with the kids and stuff like this. I can remember me and Rob Borg sort of kind of looking at one another and snickering, right? Because, like, yeah, man, we've been there. Been there, lived it, bought the t-shirt, didn't get to go hunting that much because we had small kids and had to stay home. Now, you know, fellas look at us and like, well, it must be nice. You can come and go as you please. Hey, yeah, it is. But don't
put
think
in
for,
your time, right?
Yeah, don't fucking think for 1 minute that I missed a lot of mornings because I had to stay home with the kids or whatever, right? So, again, and fellas bring it up. Ryan Bro used to talk about it all the time on this show, where he used to say, you know, there's a maturation. I love throwing out that word as much as I can because it makes me sound very smart. But, you know, he would always say there's a maturation, right? Like when you're a young kid, all you want to do is just fucking blow the face off ducks all day long, right? And then you graduate to, well, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I just want to get out and shoot my limit. That's it, right? And then it's like, well, all I care about is I want to get out and hang out with my buddies. We'll work all week long and we don't get to see one another that often. So at least in the blind, we get to hang out and stuff. And then it's, you know, I get to the point where I am now where I could care less if I even bring my gun anymore. I could just go out and run the dog all day. I don't even need to shoot anything anymore. I'd be just as happy just to watch the dog run, right? So, yeah, it takes time to get to that, and I hope everybody that listens aren't just, you know, rolling their eyes at me as I'm saying this shit, and they're actually like, well, fuck, you know, yeah, it sort of kind of sucks right now. I don't get out as much as I can, but there will come a time where your wife just don't want you in the fucking house. Cause that's where I am. My wife, cause if I'm in the house, I'm making a mess and Trish just wants me to fuck out of the house. So, you know,
and that's where, like, I've always been really lucky, like, with Carrie, cause Carrie and I both, like, we have regular hours, work through the week, vacation time. So like we're, you know, we're not working shifts. We're not working weekends and stuff like that. We've got all the holidays off. So, and Carrie and I both, like, we're crazy busy. But I don't, there's rarely a time where we have to say no to something, right?
Right.
Whether it's me going off hunting and she's dealing with the kids, or she's like, you know, this, the last 2 months, she's been away at conferences pretty much nonstop. So I'm dealing with the kids, but even now they're getting to the age where it's, they're a little more autonomous. And so like this morning I was out hunting, Carrie's gone. The boys were able to get themselves off to the bus. So
really?
We've kind of, we've kind of hit that sweet spot now where I've
been awesome.
Hunting a few times while they get themselves up in the morning and stuff like that. But yeah, it's everybody's got a different situation, right? And it's what you're willing to work with and what you're willing to prioritize too.
That's amazing that you're at that point. Like that, it honestly feels like, I don't want to make it sound like it's jail time, but it almost feels like you're let out of prison. Like when your kids can look after themselves and they can get themselves their cereal and you can trust them to get to the bus. And it's an amazing feeling as a parent when you can sort of, you know, take that step back. So good for you guys, because I know what it was like when our kids started doing it. So congratulations, because that's a big step in parenthood right there.
Well, and especially because like Carrie's always been great for like, if I want to go somewhere, if my buddy's got something going on, like she'll always make it work. But the one downfall is that her and I don't really get to hunt together.
Right.
Even though like the spot where I normally turkey hunt is 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
Easy to get there. But when the kids were little, it's like, we can't get up and leave the house at 4:30 in the morning and both of us go. But now it'll be nice because hopefully this season we can start getting up more. So usually if Carrie and I are hunting together, it's because we've had to book a hunt somewhere. Like we went down to Lake St. Clair for a few years in a row.
Yeah.
But it's like, then we've got to either have somebody come up and watch the kids for the weekend, or we've got to meet up with family like in Burlington or Dunville or somewhere along the way, drop them off. And then, you know, extra couple of hours driving here and there to arrange all that.
Yeah.
So now this year, hopefully we've got spots to turkey hunt. We've got spots to duck and goose hunt close by. We can get out in the morning and now she can start getting out a little bit more.
That's awesome. Now that's an awesome point in life to get to as a parent. Now there's a bunch of single dudes and single women that are listening to this and they're like, don't have to worry about that. And, and I'm okay with not having to worry about that. And you know what? Good for you. But there are a bunch of parents that's listening. And I think you just gave them some hope, Craig, when you were like, hey, listen, we didn't get to do all the, we didn't get to hunt together. We didn't, you know, there was things we had to miss and shit. And it was always a chore to get someone to come and watch the kids. But now look where you are now, and you're able to go turkey hunt this morning. And you know what? We're almost at that 60-minute mark, and we didn't even get a chance to talk about your turkey hunt. So we're going to go a little bit over today because I do want to know a couple things about the turkey hunt. So A, how cold were you? Because it was colder than shit here this morning when I got up to go down. Yeah.
It was -5 or -4 or something like that, but it didn't feel bad here. It's been so windy lately, but this morning was actually pretty nice.
Okay.
But I was geared up well for it.
Well, I seen a video, Luke Schurter's, and he's up, you know, on the Bruce up around where Lori Ann and him live. And he had the thermocell going for the mosquitoes.
Oh, really?
So yeah, he was like, thermocell's working and you could hear the turkeys gobbling in the foreground. Right. But you know, Luke and them had the thermocells going on. I'd be very surprised if anybody down here needed a thermocell, because it was chilly down here.
Yeah, when I got up, like I was out all day. Like I was in my blind by 5:30. And it's like, I don't have to get up crazy early, because this one property that I typically hunt, the birds never roost on it. They pretty much will pass through every day, no matter when they're coming through that day.
Yeah.
They didn't pass through today, of course. But like, yeah, it's 10 minutes away. So like I left the house. My goal was to leave here at 5. I left at 5:06 and still had plenty of time to get there. And my blinds, it's like a grassy cattle pasture area.
Yep.
So it's like, it's a nice, easy walk in. It's like real simple to get there. And the moon was crazy bright this morning too. So getting in, yes, and my way in was real easy. But yeah, it's like, I sat there, geez, I didn't pack up till 2 o'clock. I sat there all day. I heard gobbling, lots of gobbling this morning, but like so far away. And at one point they were getting closer. But then unfortunately the area they were coming from, I end up seeing two other hunters walking onto the property. So I said, so I only, there's only me and one other guy that share permission to this property. So we're and he wasn't around. Like I messaged him earlier to see which property he was going to be at. And so we're texting back and forth. I'm asking if he's out or if he knows of anybody. And he's like, nope, nobody else should be there. So then I called the homeowner because I could see her truck. And she's like, oh yeah, there's another husband and wife that hunt here now, but I told them to stay on this side of the property. And it's not a big property. So so I stuck around all day, even though I knew they were over there, just in case maybe the birds were skirting on them. Maybe they'd come in, but no, lots of gobbling. I heard two shots early this morning. And it, like it was, it's not like there was probably two hunters, and it was probably like, I'm assuming they got a double header because it, like, it was a
bang. Yeah.
And, but other than that, like, not as much gobbling as I'm used to hearing, and not as much gunshots as I'm used to hearing, but it was cold. There was no bugs. But I had, you know, my heated vest on underneath my hoodie and stuff like that. And had the buddy heater there just in case, which I turned on for my toes for a bit. Cause I just kind of layered down a little bit.
Okay.
I wasn't sitting there. Like I wasn't all bulky and stuff today. Cause I figured I'll bring the heater, and that way if I need to, I can get up and move. But yeah, no bird today, but like for me, I've always been a big bird watcher too. So it's like, I love turkey hunting for watching the birds start to come back. And like when I got out of the truck this morning, you know, I was listening to a great horned owl, a barred owl, woodpeckers morning, woodcock, snipe, ducks were flying over, and then we get a ton of cranes through the area too. So, I just sat there listening to everything this morning.
No, that's really cool. And I like turkey hunting. I'm not a fanatic. I like it, and I'll go out. But I don't, like I said, I'm not a fanatic. But your point there, you know, listening and watching this stuff, I'm not a fanatic until I hear that gobble right behind me. And when I hear that gobble behind me, then my heart rate just starts going through the roof, because it is exciting when you know that big old Tom is coming down.
And, well, especially when he wasn't making any noise beforehand, and all of a sudden he's just right there, right?
Yeah.
No, it was like today they were so far away. It was that where it's kind of to that stage where you know it's a turkey gobbling, but it just kind of sounds more like a yell because it's so far away you don't hear the notes kind of thing.
Right.
But good, at least I heard something.
Yeah. Well, I know Lorianne got hers. I seen Brendan Veerman got his, but he said his didn't come out in the morning. He got his in the afternoon.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of guys were posting later in the day.
Yeah. So, you know what? Today was the first day. Now, I know a lot of fellas got their birds today, but there's a lot of fellas that didn't, a lot of people that didn't get their birds today, too. So that's a good thing. You know, I don't think it's a lying. It's not a lying season. I shouldn't say I don't think. It's not a lying season, but you got lots of days to get out there. And the one good thing about Ontario is that our turkey population, buddy, I don't know. I'd say it's second to none, to be honest with you, because I don't think there's another place that has the turkey population that we have. I really don't. And that's U.S. and Canada. Like, I don't think there's another state province that has the population of birds that we have.
And I can't remember if it was last year, the season before. It seemed like a lot of people were not seeing as much, but not like I haven't had any issues. I haven't noticed anything in my areas. And like I've had a couple different properties the last couple of years that I've gotten, and I've lost one. I called the farmer up, and turns out his grandkids are old enough that he bought them ATVs, and the son and the grandkids live on like a severed parcel right next to the farmer. And so he's like, call me back in a few years, but the kids are out ripping around on their ATVs now. So I told my son I wouldn't let anybody in. So, but like, so over the last couple of years, I've gotten different properties. So I'm scouting different areas and driving through more areas, and I'm still seeing lots of birds.
Yeah.
I haven't noticed any issues in my area, but
there's a lot of birds around here, I can tell you that. And from what I've seen, they're still in their big groups. They haven't started to separate yet either. So
I think that is, because it was last week I was saying that, like, a lot of the groups I was seeing were still big, but that changed since the last call.
Okay. Well, buddy, like I said, this is only day one, so you got lots of time to get your bird. I got to try and get out too. Perhaps I'll go down with Phil. But I was really hoping Phil was going to come on tonight because I wanted to hear what happened. He said
he's got a good story.
Yeah, he said it was too much to type out, and he would tell us on the show. So,
than frustration or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. So, I'd be interested to hear that. But we'll have to wait till next week. Craig, last word to you, my man.
Nothing really to add. Just hope everybody has a good and safe season out there, and whether it's a short one for them or they kind of get out throughout the season, enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for listening. This is the Union 0430. We are not experts. We will never pretend to be experts. Just a group of friends that love one another's company and chatting about shooting birds. That's it. Big love, surround yourself with good people, and talk to you next week.